is wildlife with my mom. I mean, I'm German. Okay, no. This is wildlife with my mom.
Okay, so let's try. If it's laggy, let me know. We will turn off the video. And if it's still laggy, I will go to another room and see if the internet is better there. Okay. Nice, nice. Let's start. Okay, so I will introduce you quite briefly, and then I will give you the room to tell more about your work and achievements and all these things. Is that okay?
Okay. Sure. Were you able to watch the movie?
Yes. Love it. I have so many questions. I really, at the end, the Shiva Lila thing, that really blew my mind. I love it. So, plenty of questions.
Okay, good.
Really nice. Sure. Okay. Yes. So, very welcome. Today with me is Jonathan Behrman. You are a filmmaker and you're just celebrating your 20th anniversary of your movie Commune. And we will talk a little bit about my favorite time today, the 60s. And... yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you ended up shooting this movie and how you ended up being a filmmaker and all of these.
Sure, yeah. Okay, well, We were, as I grew up in suburban New York area, and so kind of too young to have been in the 60s. But definitely heard about the 60s from brothers and sisters and that kind of thing. So, and was going into Manhattan when I was 13 for the Marijuana Day marches and all that in Washington Square Park and reading Abby Hoffman and a lot of countercultural influences like Mad Magazine and all kinds of stuff like that. Playing music. I've always loved playing music. I play keyboards. So I play, you know, kind of jam band 60s music. So we were making movies even back when we were like 13 or so. We were shooting film, Super 8 film. And which still looks beautiful, Super 8 film. And so the movie making thing had been in me for a long time. And this project came about, weirdly enough, I was working on developing a project about barbecue in the Carolinas, like barbecue pork. And, perfect logical way to start a film about the ultimate 60s commune. And I was pitching it to a philanthropist, because these documentaries do not fund themselves. And I know people think on... the internet, they're like, hey, I'm going to free this movie and put it up. And it's like, well, what about all the people who worked on it for 10 years or 5 years or whatever? You know, so I was pitching that movie and he was quick to say, no, that's not interesting to me. And I said, what is interesting to you? And he said he was interested in stuff that's off the grid, you know, societies and things that are. And I was like, me too. So I went and I got on the old Amazon.com, which was newer back then, and found this book that the people of Black Bear Ranch wrote together about. Mm-hmm. Each person wrote 1 to 5 pages, something like that, about growing up or moving to Black Bear Ranch. And I just found these people incredible because on the one hand, it was like... this is not a spa, so don't come up here with your dog, because if it's a spa, if you think it's a spa and you bring your dog, we might eat your dog. So
ate the cow. Let's talk about the cow later.
Oh, the cow story, yeah. And then a few chapters later, someone else wrote, you know, having animals as speciesist, you know, we should free all the animals. So I was like, well, this is great. I love the conflict and contradictions here. And it seemed like a very... intriguing group of people. Not hippie exactly.
A little bit. I had the impression when I was very lucky you sent me the movie. I think it reminded me a little bit of my parents. They had like a period where they were quite hippy-dippy, and I thought like this was the vibe, you know, maybe not 100% hippie, but this off the grid thing, I loved it. So tell me a little bit more. How did it feel to work on that movie? Because you were so close to these people. Sometimes I do like little movies with my kids, and it's super interesting to be behind the camera. I love that. Because what is going on? I mean, people just know maybe like 10% of what is happening throughout the whole time while shooting a movie. So tell me a bit more about how that felt. What was going on behind the scenes?
You know, every movie is like opening up a new business, right? You're into this business, libertarian type thing. And each one has its own guidelines and kind of guides you where you should go. But really, for documentary, creative documentary, I'm not talking about the more educational ones, but the more creative ones, you make the film in the edit room. So we thought we had some good stuff, but then you also have, we had, 100 plus hours of material. And so it's a miracle when it all comes together. That's all I could say. And having seen the film recently, I think it does hold up. I mean, it's a good story. We didn't fuck it up.
It is.
I mean, and the thing is, thank you. And the thing is, there's like a million stories. There's people who there was one point we had one other person in the film, and the film just couldn't hold another person. And it didn't make sense. And we pulled her out, which we didn't want to do. It always seemed so precious. But there's that expression, kill your darlings. Nothing to do with your babies, but your material that you love so much. Try to see what happens if you lose it. And so once we lost that character, it started taking shape. And the other thing that happened was Elsa Marley, who was one of the Black Bear founders, Elsa and Richard, she was like, you should call them. It's all very kind of synchronistic. It is in that way very hippie. The whole synchronicity, Shambhala, it's meant to happen, kismet, you know? And she's like, there was this guy back then who was traveling around with a video camera. You should find him. It was like the earliest video camera called the Portapak. And he had shot this footage of them. And when we got it, I was really at first disappointed. Yeah, it was rotting away in a basement in Oregon, in the northwest of the United States. And we found the last machines that could transfer this ancient video format, you know, with the metal falling off the things as they're transferring it. And we looked at the footage and we're like, oh no, there's only like 12 minutes of Black Bear Ranch. But it turned out like those 12 minutes really made the difference because, Alex, you get to see them when they're young and when they're older, you know? And so when you cut between those two, it really, you can focus your heart and your mind on that person when they're young. It's like if you see an old couple and they seem to like be in love, I think they're seeing each other back when they were 20 in a way, you know?
How cute. That's pretty cute. So I think you got to know these people quite well while shooting that movie. And there are so many different life stories inside of one movie. It's incredible. And what I really liked, one at the beginning, someone said being something else than consumers or employees. I really felt that the whole movie was about liberating yourself and living exactly like the opposite of what is the normal way of living. So you came very close to these people. Did it influence you in any way of how you looked at life, maybe?
I mean, it reinforced some of the stuff that I already kind of knew, but definitely made me reflect upon my social circles, you know, having community. And these days, you know, they call it social media. We were talking about this the other day. They should call it anti-social media. You know, everybody's all like in their own mind, in their own head, getting their deliveries and, you know, looking at their streams, and you don't have to interact anymore. And especially for generations that grew up with COVID and all that, it's like, wow, it's hard for them. So I think it really reinforced the importance of community for me.
Yeah.
In spite of all the messiness, you know.
Yeah, it seems quite messy. So I think what they were really trying to do is anarchism. And yesterday I read something, or maybe the day before, I think that was really interesting, because most of the people think anarchism is just craziness overall, but it's more like resonance based.
Lost you for a second.
Oh, joder. Shall I go to the other room?
That's your call. Want to try it?
Yeah. I will try. Give me a second.
Okay. You got it.
The kids will hate me. Because I promised them they will have this all to themselves, and I will be in the fucked up room over there.
Okay, yeah, I thought you meant a virtual room. See how we...
No, don't worry. But I figured out this room is the best.
It is better, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I lost the point where we stopped at all.
You were telling me about growing up in Germany.
Ah, that sucked. It was so boring. You cannot imagine how boring that was.
Did you have to go into your basement to laugh?
Yes. Actually, yes. My parents don't have humor at all. And I was always laughing. I played theater and all these things. It was very artistic. So I always had this huge energy for creation, you know? And my parents were like that serious with everything. So they hated me. I can't say that. They hated me, seriously. They hated me so much.
Your parents hating you. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this hated me. Now it's getting better. At least with my dad, I'm finding a way to... He's now accepting the way I see life. That is cool because, I mean, it's about time. I'm 35.
Yeah.
And I didn't change. Yeah, they always thought I'm a weirdo and I will change if they pressure me into it. Turned out, no way. I was born a weirdo. So this is why I love these community stories so much, because I always felt like when I grow up, I want to live in a community like that, with normal people that want to really live life and experience stuff instead of just doing what everyone else tells you to do. And I really think the courage of living that is awesome. It's so inspiring to see, especially for all the families that were that you pictured in the movie. First of all, I think some people might think, oh, the poor kids growing up so in a strange environment. Mm-hmm. And I really thought there was one girl, she was like grown up in the second part of the movie, and she talked about her past and stuff. And I didn't have the feeling that she screwed up. Quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. I had the feeling that she's really aware of her situation and her upbringing, and that she was grateful for these experiences. I think we should have way more of these kids growing up so wild. Would make this earth a better place, I guess. So I love hippies, just because my parents hated these kind of weirdos. Although I think they are a little bit like these hippies.
Right. So. Right. Well, you know, as I was saying, I would argue that they're not exactly hippies because they were so anarchistic. Like when I think of hippie, like actually I'm in upstate New York near Woodstock. The summer.
Oh yes.
And there's all kinds of parties and stuff, and I'm like, okay, this party I'm going to, is it going to be super tie-dye with like white people with dreadlocks? I'm like, I don't want to go. So I'm always like one part of that world, but definitely outside it, more like Epicurean bohemian than a hippie, me personally. But yeah, to Celia, who's in the film. Like when you grow up in a place, that's what's normal for you to a degree, right?
Yeah.
So there's nothing weird for those kids, unless they moved out in the middle. But it seemed like they're mostly, that generation was mostly born at the ranch.
Yeah, that's so incredible. And they did it with no help from outside. They just birthed their kids all alone in the woods or at home. I love that part, because when I... got pregnant, everyone was like, oh my God, which hospital are you choosing? And I was like, I would like to choose Mother Nature for this, but it was illegal, so I didn't. But I had a a really good midwife, and she made it all natural and everything. But I think for the second kid, I would definitely go out in nature, in river or something like that, because this is how kids should be born, like with your friends or your family, and not like so artificial. This part really, I don't know, impressed me. This is courage all the way, because if something goes wrong, they're gonna hang you for it. You know what I mean?
Is it courage or is it foolhardy? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's courage. True. Yeah. And they are able to do it, and they learned about how to, you know, how to give birth to babies in the proper ways. I, you know, it's a weird connection, but when, my first job, last job actually, producing an early version of reality TV, was a TV show called Maternity Ward.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, so I was producing at the San Francisco State Hospital, University Hospital. And I lucked out because they were a great group, and they had the thing where, like, yeah, you could go total midwife and you have your midwife and your chilled out room and all that. But if anything went wrong, they'll just whip you over to the other floor and give you an epidural. And I think that's the best of both worlds if you can, you know. So yeah, the Bay Area. Yeah. Cause you know, the Bay Area was always ahead in that world, you know, like with natural medications and all that. I'm like, I'm going to take the, unless it's really bad, I'm going to take the official MD double reviewed scientific version. And then I'm also going to take the woo woo version too. Just really? Do both, you know? Yeah.
I like that. I've been experimenting on myself with meditation only to cure things. I cut my finger once. You can see it's still there because it grew back. And in the hospital, they told me like, oh my God, you have to have like an operation right away. You will never be able to use your finger again. Maybe it's spreading into the hand because the nerves and everything. They were so afraid for me, and I didn't have time. I'm a single mom, and I had like 2 hours before kindergarten ended. And I was like, dude, I have to catch a bus. I actually have to catch a bus. I don't have time for that shit. And they put it back on somehow, taped it, and send me back home. I had to sign all these documents, if and this and that. And I went back home and I meditated for like 48 hours, almost only meditating with my kid. And he's very aware of how I deal with these things. And you see, everything's fine. And they told me I will never be able to do that again. It's just impossible. And the last couple of days, I had the same thing. I was really, really sick. I had something major disgusting. I was like, dude, I told my kids, like, please cut open my head, pull it out, whatever it is, you have to cut me open. And they were like refusing. They were like, it's disgusting, we're not going to do it. I'm like, okay, so meditation it is, because I'm not going to go to the doctor, and it's vanished. And the good part is they are witnesses of what I'm doing. And that is the good part. I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm not alone. I have them to know it's true. You can cure, I guess, anything, if you believe it. I think it's really about placebo effect in your mind. I really do think that.
I partially agree.
Yeah, partially. Let's cut off your finger and try. No, okay. But
let's do
that. Made me that made me less afraid of living off grid, because it was always, oh my God, what if I don't know, slip and fall into the chainsaw, and then I cut off my leg and everything. And in the end, I'm like, okay, we can handle, maybe not a cut off leg, but a finger we can handle. That made me really like, okay, let's go. Let's go to the forest, live there with no medical attention.
I just want to say on behalf of Commune and related entities that we do not endorse this behavior, because modern medicine has cool things like when really needed can save your life. That's just saying.
True.
But so you... True. You do, yeah, like these people who are trying to, you know, and I agree with you. My dog is trying to get out. It's hot out there, baby girl. our friends. It reminds me of a sort of very unrelated story, but I think you might appreciate it. Barbet Schroeder, the director, who I think he's from Switzerland or Germany.
They are back. Uh-oh. Sorry, one second. Tut mir leid, in dem Raum war kein Empfang. Ich muss hier aufnehmen. Pardon. Ihr müsst das umswitchen oder was auch immer, ja? Oder ganz still.
Dog wants to go out. Your kids are coming. My dog's going. Okay, there we go.
That's good.
Yeah. So Barbet Schroeder was, let me sit up here. He was, had a film he wanted to make. It was optioned by Canon Films, which is like a crank 'em out movie company in the 80s. And they would not make the film and they wouldn't release their option on it. So he came into their offices with a chainsaw and he said, okay, guys, you know, filmmaking starts a little later, maybe 10:30. I'm going to start by cutting off my pinky finger. And I'm going to keep cutting off fingers on the hour until you release me. Either you make the movie or you give it back to me. So they're like looking around like, is this madman going to do this? And I think he was about to do it. And they said, okay, we're going to release your film. You can make it yourself with another company. And so my point there is just the intensity it takes to craft and then dealing with the whole other commercial side of it, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. That must be crazy. Because, like, creating the movie is the fun part. But what is behind all of that shit show, like talking to all these people, making sure that it's released when you want to see it released and these kind of things. I think if I ever shoot a movie and I wish I had the time or talent to do it, I want someone else to deal with the rest.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Yeah. And with this film, we've had a lot of help. First Run Features is the distributor, and they're great. They've been around forever, and they helped get it out there. Slam Dance Film Festival premiered the film. Slam Dance, not Sundance. It's the alternative to Sundance, which is now its own kind of large festival that moved out of Park City. It started in Park City as a alternative to Sundance. Like, we're just gonna sop off the crowds from Sundance and bring them to our festival. And now it's in Los Angeles and doing really well. So Slam Dance, First Run Features, and yeah, once we got into Slam Dance, it was like people were interested, and then we played all over the world and in theaters. And then First Run put it out on Netflix and a bunch, and it was in like a ton of European TV stations as well. So the film had a good run. I just feel like now we were up-resing the film for today. Modern standards for Apple TV and all that, just making some format changes, boring stuff. And although I like the geeky, boring stuff. In the process of doing that, I was like, you know, let's pull it from every streaming platform and let's show it in theaters and have people see each other. So tomorrow night I'm showing, I'm showing the film in upstate New York. We're having a lot of bookings in upstate New York, and now we're booked out in the California Bay Area, of course. So people from Black Bear will be there. So
nice.
Yeah, they're
that
like
is
my,
awesome.
It's a little bit like I feel like they're my relative, a little guilty, yeah. Like my relatives who I didn't call enough.
Oh, that is so cool. But I would feel the same. I wanted to ask you, how will it feel like to meet them again after all that time? How long has it been, or did you, like, have you been in contact with them in the meantime?
I have been in contact here and there. Allegra, she's the daughter of Gaba, who builds that beautiful house with the stained glass, and the whole community helps her. I've been in touch with Allegra. She wanted to get all the raw footage, which was a big undertaking. Nice. So I teach at Cal State San Marcos, another entity, which great school. It's one of the Cal State schools, and they helped on the film when I just got there 20 years ago. So all my original tapes are there in North San Diego. So we have to dub them and get them to Allegra. So I've been in touch with Allegra. I've been in touch with Cannoli a lot. I don't know, you have to see the film to know who I'm talking about, guys.
Yeah,
I don't know about our European, what's happening on the Europe. That's on a whole nother front and beyond, Europe and beyond. You know. But yeah, like I said, it had been on. I guess I should go back to all the people who showed it 20 years ago and see what they say.
Yes, true. It's super interesting.
Was it on Arte? It was on Planet in France.
I researched it, and you can watch it on so many different platforms. So I will put the links
in
there.
They're supposed to not be on those. Do not put the links for the people. Don't put the links for the people who steal it.
No, of course not.
They got to pay their $3 or pounds or whatever they are.
Of course. No, I meant like this payments.
One Bitcoin. If somebody wants to pay just one Bitcoin, I will screen it for your entire community.
That's cool.
Your entire country.
Country. That's cool.
Yeah, that's what people used to buy pizzas with. People used to pay five bitcoins for a pizza. People are probably freaking out now.
True. I would bite my own ass if that would have been me. Seriously, that is crazy.
Are you that flexible?
I don't think so. I would need to hire someone to bite my own ass for that shit. But I couldn't because I would be broke, so... Shit.
There you go.
That's really fucked up. That's fucked up. So maybe let's talk a bit about the kids that grew up there. I think there were at least 11, I counted, or something like that, maybe more. And what I really...
Really?
Because the last couple of years, I've been living close to a lot of hippy-dippy people, and they have no problem with running around naked and all these things. And even with the kids, right. I mean, being naked is one thing, but having this nudist... touch in your lifestyle. And one thing I remember that really disgusted me was there is a community, and if they have a problem within the community, everyone has to sit in a huge circle completely naked, the kids as well. So this is where I draw the line. If you have a problem and you want to discuss it naked, do it, but leave the kids out if they don't want to. Teenagers, everyone had to be naked. So this is what I experience in the last years regarding hippies and kids and communities and off-grid living. So they were quite too involved with the kids, I would say. So and I know that being naked was also an issue or a topic in this community you were working with. So maybe you can share something about that, because I think it was quite interesting. There was so much going on with like not only having kids, like giving birth within the community, but all the other stuff as well. It was quite open-minded, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like we found the perfect canvas to talk about all the issues of the 60s in one place. There was a thing called the Whole Earth Catalog. And if you can find it online, I think like sections of it or the whole thing probably. And it's like two pages on organic gardening before it even really kind of was called that, and a few pages on how to fix your VW van. And so this film is like that, you know. So that definitely was an issue. I mean, imagine you're in the 1950s, right, with all that Leave It to Beaver was an American TV show, like very conformity ridden society of the nuclear family, and growing up that way, and you know, being people wondering if you're a communist and all that stuff. And bursting out of that, they just were trying to blow away every block or old way that seemed to just want to fall away. So that was one of them. We have this poster for the film, which has a bunch of people naked. And somebody recently said to me, is that like an old guy with like a naked child on his lap? And I was like, I never even thought about it, because I'm not a pedophile, so I don't think that way, you know. But, and I'm not saying the person who said that is, but it was a good point. I mean, it's controversial, but I don't think they were thinking of it that way either. I mean, nobody I spoke to yet has said there was anything untoward happening. But yeah, the nakedness thing was funny. It's you know, what's more erotic is some clothing. When you go to full naked, it's less erotic.
Yes, true. It's true. I always discuss this with the kids, and I'm always telling them, like, if you're completely naked, you look less attractive than if you have, like, something on it. Because don't go to school naked. They don't go to school anyway.
Right.
And to be honest, I don't know. Running around naked is just so monkey-like. So this is maybe why. But I don't know. So I think there was one more interesting, like 10 million more interesting points, but one thing that really stuck out to me. The people always tell me, and I know this from other communities, it felt like coming home. Like always the sense, it felt like coming home. So I know that feeling because I've been to so many communities living there, blah, blah, blah. And I always felt like coming home. But I think this is why It is because the people are more open-minded, more conscious, and more aware of how they treat each other, maybe. So coming from this he wants his toy. I was thinking, what the fuck does he want from me all the time? Yalla, adios. And I think really in comparison to this boring lifestyle we have, where everyone is focused on making money, surviving, blah, 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 seeing these communities where people really try to live and thrive and experience life. This is too loud, dude. Just fuck off, please. I think in between, it feels like you're coming home because it's more humane than the actual life we are living, like most of us are living. So I don't know, maybe you experienced the same when you got there, like, oh my god, I feel home. But maybe not. But what do you think this is coming, where this is coming from, this feeling home feeling?
Well, yeah, it brings up a lot of thoughts, and I think I told you I'm a little sleep deprived today, but I think I can still partially think. So one thing that was, this is just an anecdote that comes to mind. One of my camera dudes was Tamás Bojtor, who's from Hungary. And it was so hilarious because when we got there, I think because he had lived communally in Hungary because he was in there. I'm not even sure. But he just started kind of like grabbing their CDs and dubbing them as we were like in between shoots, like without asking, you know? So I was like, okay, he feels at home, you know? And yeah, I did feel at home. I mean, one thing is when I got there and met some of the people, and these were like the OGs, who weren't living there anymore, to be fair. They already kind of graduated out of Blackware, but like Gaba and Harriet and Ephraim and all these people, they're like neurotic East Coast Jews like me, you know. Richard was half Irish, half Jewish, I think. And so it was really like, in that way, it almost was like literally coming home, you know.
Nice.
Have you ever see the film Almost Famous?
Yes. What
it's
is it about?
Film. I don't know. It's about anymore. That kid becomes a rock journalist. And there's a scene where he's...
Yes, of course.
His so cute. His sister, Cameron Crowe. His sister is going to become a stewardess and leaving the house, the nuclear family. And she's like, look under my bed. You'll find the albums. Stare into them and you will understand the secret of the universe. So I felt that same way. My sister was more in the kind of 60s generation. And she had all those albums, Waiting for the Sun, Jim Morrison and the Doors, Jimi Hendrix, Grateful Dead, Kraftwerk. Radioactivity, you know? So those albums and that music was a kind of home for me too. And as a musician, even in suburban Long Island, we were doing our own acid tests when we were like 15 or 16, you know, with LSD and playing music in our friend's basement for hours and people tripping. So there was that element of home too. Heimat, we call it.
Yeah, Heimat, that's cool. Yeah,
so
I like that.
Heimat, it goes beyond home, but I don't know if it's the same as Heimisha. Heimisha maybe is a little warmer. That's a Yiddish word. It means like homey, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Heimat,
oh,
I think,
nice.
Might even mean like homeland. It's a little more formal.
So, yeah, you can say that.
No.
But
yeah,
it's also like very lovely, like Heimat, that tells people that you like it. Because you wouldn't say Heimat.
I did a film about the Ruskie Banya, the Russian baths in New York. And I remember I was very happy they showed it in Austria, Vienna, under a banner of Heimat. And they added a short film by Scorsese. I'm like, okay, I'm showing with Scorsese in Vienna. This can't be bad. So, you know, what is home is a great question. It really is. And, you know, as someone who, you know, in spite of what I said before, I do believe we create our own reality. You know, I would offer that wherever I am, I'm home.
Yeah.
That's a very empowering belief system.
It is. I think that has something spiritual.
Absolutely. You go to a party, like, I wish I had remembered that. I was lucky to go to two parties the other night. And one was really great cutting edge artists, some of them sort of well known. And I was like, this is great. I could talk to everyone. Later that night, went to a party of a really nice local British guy. And it was more like shikimiki, right? Mm-hmm. That's an old term, but yuppie, you'd say. I back like in the it. Day. Yeah. And so I really couldn't connect. But if I had remembered that, wherever I go, I'm home. So, but at Black Bear, I did actually feel that, partially because of the people and the values and all that.
True. I really like that. Let's talk about the cow that really that fucked
well that's
up.
What killed the cow talking
yes,
about
that
it
is, it's hilarious. I think the story was like they had a cow and it was providing milk and everything was great, everyone loved the cow, and at some point people wanted to eat it and they did. How could they?
Yeah, well, it was and by the way, that story and a couple other tidbits along with recommendations are coming are on our social, Commune the Movie on Instagram for you insties, and it's also on Facebook. But we have that story, and it's like there was a big thing about the cow. This is Cedar, who's a great character. By the way, people change their names for a lot of reasons besides like transforming into someone else, also evading the draft. You know, like no, I'm not going to go to Vietnam and kill women and children for my government. So. I would have definitely been on that side and gone to Canada or something. And in fact, I just became a Canadian citizen.
Nice.
Yeah, it really is. And my libertarian or right-wing nephew is calling me a traitor now. Hilarious. You know, I'm not killing women and children for my government. But Cedar, he says, you know, there was a big thing about the cow and everybody was backed up. And some people wanted to eat it. Maybe we could milk it. I can't do his whole story. But yeah, I mean, that's a great parable almost about like sometimes over talking things can lead to the wrong results. Alex, this is why I could never be a communist. The meetings.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't be a communist or an alcoholic. Yeah. Can't be a communist. Too many meetings.
Too many meetings, and just imagine all this bullshit, blah, blah, you have to listen to. I mean, if it's just you talking to other people, okay, I can live with that. Hearing my own voice, all right, but 99% of people talking to me, I don't want to hear them. So just imagine a room full of these 99%. No way. Couldn't do it.
Mm. What 99%? What do you mean?
Like the blah, blah people, the uninteresting.
The blah, blah people.
Yeah, that you have to have meetings with them and all these discussions. No way. Impossible. Really not.
Right. Well, at Black Bear, it was truly impossible because everybody went there for their own reason. This person was a political renegade. This person was who knows, back to the land person. This person was, at one point, this is not in the film, a Black revolutionary, a guerrilla group came up there. And brought like machine guns, and they were doing target practice, you know. Yeah, up at Black Bear.
That is crazy.
And and the people at Black Bear were like, "Hey guys, excuse me, we have like kids here and stuff. This is probably not the best idea." Eventually, they left, and I waited outside the home of one of those guys, and he just didn't come out. Sometimes people chicken out of interviews. I'm sure you've had that. Mm-hmm. But I would have loved to have known more about it. Because, yeah, the hippie thing and, you know, psychology, hippies, counterculture, not always, but a lot of times it is the domain of people who have the affluence to do it. If you're working in a coal mine or you're being a welder, like our Lindsman Werner Herzog, he got out of that and used those experiences to fuel his work. But, yeah, and you have to have some life experiences, I think, to make anything. But what was I talking about? Sorry, I lost my train of thought, Alex. What were we talking
Don't
about?
Don't worry. No, I forgot it as well. As you asked me, it vanished from my brain. Do you know that? Sometimes I have this when my kids are asking me something while we talk. It's like I don't even know what we talked about before. Now that you asked, it's gone.
I think maybe just something about like all different kinds of people showing up for all different kinds of reasons. So exactly. Meetings must have been insane. And I think that was a great example of it. That's either, and the poor cow didn't
the
make
poor
it.
Poor cow. She didn't make it. But it is
it,
what
I'm,
it is.
I'm assuming. Yeah.
I couldn't. I mean, you know that cow so well. It had, and That's true. A personality, isn't it? I mean, it is too personal. I couldn't eat my dog. That is disgusting. Even if I was a dog eater, I couldn't eat my dog.
No, I know. Well, that is a whole Western thing that maybe we need to break through. Talk about black bear type stuff. Like, maybe it's better to eat a pet that you or something you know really well. I don't know.
Maybe
it
is.
Feelings. But in Western culture, especially in the States, you know, people, they don't want to know what their meat and stuff is. It's, you know, it's the less it looks like. A lot of people won't eat a whole fish here because they see the fish head, you know. So those people should not go to Greece.
No, for sure not. I wanted to ask, like, where do you get fish without a head? But obviously in regions where it's not.
America.
Yeah, normal to have, like, fresh fish. I prefer the head because then you know, like, what it looked like. Makes it, strangely, more personal. I can eat fish that I know, but I cannot eat it. I think the fur, it's making this whole situation weird for me. If it has fur, it's a friend. I can eat snakes and crocodiles, no problem, but stuff with fur, I don't know. Disgusting somehow.
I'll remember that when I come visit, Alex.
I will hunt down a snake for you. No, seriously.
Thank you.
A couple of days ago, we've been to a little river here, like, I don't know, in the middle of nowhere. And I was late to the party. The kids came screaming at me, "Oh, there are snakes in the river." And I was like, bam, we got lunch, boys. And I was
really,
the snakes were already gone. Yeah, I wanted to catch one. I was in this river and searching, like, where the fuck are they hiding? I really wanted to eat one of them.
Have you ever eaten a snake?
Yes, actually, I did. And it's not disgusting. I would prefer it over this mass production chicken or whatever.
Exactly.
Anytime.
I know people love eel. That's in Japan.
Oh.
And in
Never
Europe.
Tried that, maybe.
Really?
No.
Sushi? They do it.
Yes, but I never tried eel.
You wouldn't know it's an eel because they toast it and they put the sweet sauce on it.
Ah, crazy shit. But I eat snails and all these things. So basically eat everything.
And on the film front, I think that was part of it too. Learning how to live off the land and Hoss.
Yes, crazy.
Hoss, somebody asked me recently about Hoss, who's at the beginning of the film. He's a Karuk Indian or part Karuk, I forgot. But the tribes that were up there, and he was like, "I got to teach these people how to catch stuff and how to, you know, survive the winter," because they were originally basically mostly city people. You know,
yeah,
they didn't know.
I don't know. Yeah, that is the crazy change, isn't it? Because for me, it was a crazy change. We lived in Berlin, then we moved to the jungle for quite a bit. And then we moved to the Canary Islands. I mean, Canary Islands is easy to live. They have food in the market. But this change, but the change is like it's mindset. It's a mindset thing. And I think, at least for me, if you once got there, like, you can produce your own food, you can hunt for it, and you can go there and just kill something and eat it. It makes much more sense than going to the supermarket. Now we live in Portugal and it really sucks. I mean, buying food here is, I would say, complicated for people like me. If you really want fresh stuff, it's rare. It's
really rare.
They have millions of supermarkets, of course, but like really fresh things, like hunted.
There must be a farmer's market. You got to find your farmers.
There it is. It is. But they still have things from New Zealand and stuff. And I was thinking, dude, if you go there, I expect people to have like Portuguese food, like from the region here. Like, no, it's crazy. But I was very like, I forgot the word, spoiled by the Canary Islands because the food is just awesome. You have fresh food and everything. So I think living off the grid is really changing a lot, like mindset stuff. How did you feel over there with all these challenges maybe? Or I don't know, how did it change you or influence you?
You know, there is that thing with like suburbia and all that. And certainly less at my house, but you'd go to a friend's house and their refrigerator would be stocked.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since we were getting high back then. as teenagers. We like eat through our friends' like family's like well-stocked refrigerator. But there is something actually really good about not having a well-stocked refrigerator.
Yeah.
Food becomes more of a thing, you know. I guess back in ye olden days, they'd spend like days and weeks on the hunt, right? So, I think this whole trend towards farmers markets and all that, yeah, you got to find your farmers, Alex. Got to be there somewhere. They're there.
They
somewhere.
Are here, yeah, all around me.
You got to call them up. Go visit
crazy.
Them. Here too.
Yeah, I do. All the time. I'm walking through their fields and everything, and I'm waving to them and everything. But I don't know where all the products are. I don't get it.
Maybe they ship them off to like, you know, Paris or something.
Paris. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's crazy. But I hope that we don't stay that long, that I have to really get into the food game here. Let's see. I would rather leave.
Another revolution, right, that started like against and related to the hippie thing was like this whole horrible Silicon Valley culture, you know.
Yeah.
Remember there was that thing, I think they called it Soylent, which was kind of a joke about Soylent Green, the old movie where they're eating people. And it's just like, oh, I'm working 15 hours or 18 or 20 hours a day at Google or whatever, so I'm just going to drink these protein shakes called Soylent. And not, there is something liberating about not having to deal with the whole.
But yeah, true.
Food things
just like, having like a little pill
swallow it. I'm not like that. I love good food
and,
and I enjoy cooking and eating with friends and all that, but there are those artist types I noticed when I was in art school at Bard College who would just, there's those types, they're just like, yeah, they just ate a little macaroni and cheese and they keep painting, you know. It's like food's not a big thing for them.
Crazy. I mean, if I'm in the zone of producing something, I can relate. That is okay.
Me too. It's just like, oh my God, we've been editing for 6 hours and it felt like 20 minutes. That's a good sign. So the edit process, you asked before about the making, the edit process is pretty magical.
Yeah.
And I did this other film, I think I mentioned to you about UFOs in Joshua Tree, which was another counterculture area.
Yes, I loved it.
That's Calling All Earthlings. And then my new one is the third and final part of the California trilogy. And that is about a billionaire who wants to build this kind of ski lift over the heads of the working class people in Chinatown and going by their windows.
Oh, nice. That's something for me.
Yeah, it's hyper political, which I usually don't do. You know?
No, I love it. Really cool. Yeah, let's talk maybe a little bit about spirituality. How was this going down in the community? Because from what I've seen in the communities that I visited, it's always an issue. Always someone is not deep enough into letting go or something like that. And that, I think, from my point of view, was most of the times the main issue, that people make each other feel like they are not ready enough or anything like that, not connected enough and these kind of things.
Well, it was Buddha himself who said that the spiritual trap was one of the traps, you know.
Like
when you think you're holy, that's when you've lost it. So you know, we lucked out with Black Bear Ranch because it wasn't a spiritual hang. And in fact, there is a scene where somebody's like, we would visit these other communes and they'd be meditating and hugging each other and gazing into each other's eyes. And we thought that was weird. they were like anarchists. It was no one way. And I love that. And Richard Marley, who's, you know, him and Elsa founded Black Bear, they had already been through San Francisco in the 60s. And the like, you know, at that point, people were coming to San Francisco from, you know, Ohio, like 16-year-olds, and showing up with no money and tripping, and it was a disaster in a way. And so they helped those kids who were coming in, you know, get fed and sheltered and all that. And then they left, but they took that kind of ethos and brought it up there. But Richard was able to hold on to this idea of anarchy and socialism, but in a way that was very light touch. It wasn't like you have to believe a certain thing.
That's cute. Makes sense. Because I really think everyone has their own way to talk to God or whoever, whatever is up there.
Yeah.
There's not one way. It is impossible that there's just one way to communicate.
That's no, right. Crazy. It's just like, our God is better than yours, and therefore we're going to kill each other. That's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Crazy.
What's happening in this world? The other film, Earth Calling All Earthlings, is much more about spirituality. A guy who's like works at the booming defense plants in Los Angeles in the 50s, comes from Ohio. He's a flight buff, and he flew planes, crop dusters as a kid. And he goes to the desert and has an encounter, he says, with aliens who tell him to build this machine that will be this like Swiss Army knife of spirituality and rejuvenation called the Integratron. And he builds it out in the desert before there was anything really out there very much. Maybe some old veterans and stuff were living there. And so that was very spiritual because there was a spiritual connection with the, in his, George Van Tassel was his name, in his world, hyper spiritual, the relationship with the space beings.
Ooh. I like it. As a kid, I was always hoping someone would pick me up because I felt like I don't belong here. What is that? It's me chaotic. Too. It's distress. What is that even? Everyone's fighting all the time. I'm not here for that shit. Please pick me up. Bring me home. It's
I was
insane.
Convinced that my family was aliens at one point when I was like 7. they didn't tell us, but we were. But the other side of all that is this also was a very dissident counterculture thing that the government was worried about, the United States government, and they were infiltrating that because going out to the desert from the city, living communally, even for the week or the weekend or for longer, meditating and like kind of blowing off money and all that in the rat race, that was a threat, you know? And so they infiltrated that with some of the very early versions of COINTELPRO, which is an FBI program that they then used against some of the African-American who are trying to get justice and a bunch of other people who alleged communists. So it's your spirituality, you can't, you know, you can talk about one, but they're all connected, right? Spiritual, political, physical. Sure. So yeah, but the spirituality of the 60s also led to that kind of grab bag philosophy of like, well, I'm a little bit Buddhist, take a touch of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the old world Jewish stuff is good, and then mix them all together and I'll have my custom made religion.
Yeah, I like that.
And then we can worship AI soon in a few years.
Yes.
According to my friend on Facebook, he said that there's going to be some kind of super intelligence coming in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And that AI itself was saying that it's possible that people will worship that.
Yeah. I guess we will all worship it at one point if it tries to kill us. But you know what? I think it's funny. In November, there's a huge alien fleet coming towards Earth, they said. And November, they will be here to fight us. So I'm looking forward to November. And other thing I picked up is Iran says white, tall Nazi aliens are running the USA. I think it's beautiful what's going on out there. It's hilarious. Sometimes I think people are so freaked out by what is happening on this planet because it's too much. We have access to every piece of information out there. People are just getting more and more insane. It's like
a lot of
insanity.
Yeah, and a lot of disinformation.
Yeah. We will see in November if it is disinformation.
Oh.
So what is now? It's July. So we have August.
I don't know.
A couple of more months.
You know, people
were,
it's like those people who are predicting the end of the earth. They're always wrong.
Yeah,
so far.
True. So far.
Someone will be right at some point because nothing lasts forever.
Yeah. I would like to see these aliens running the USA.
The Aryan ones or the good ones?
Yeah. Oh, all of them.
All of them.
I would like to meet all of them. Seriously.
Right.
If
right.
President Trump can meet them, why can't I?
Did he meet them?
He must if they control the country. Or how do they do it? Like, do they have a chip inside his body somewhere controlling him? That would be insane.
Well, this is off of my pay grade, as they say.
True. I don't know. I don't know. So let's see.
I mean,
maybe there's one more thing I want to ask you, because related to kids and how they are brought up. And I think in this community, it's often like the kids don't belong to their parents anymore, but they belong to the community because they are not really couples anymore and these kind of things. So I've witnessed some of these communities living like that. And I saw that these kids are super happy because everyone cares for them. Everyone loves them. And it's not, it didn't feel wrong, to be honest. It felt like a tribe. And we visited some tribes in the jungle and I saw it. I mean, everyone has their parents, but the community is caring much more for the kids than we are used to it now in our everyday life. So I think that's something beautiful. How did you, see that or,
Yeah, it's a whole nother thing. And maybe this release will lead to the film about the kids, you know. One thing I remember that was a plus in that realm was that somebody, this didn't make it into the film, right? So there's all that footage. Was that like, it was great because I had a number of mothers. I don't think it's in the film.
Nice.
And so if my birth mom said no, I could just go to another mother to get permission for something. That's pretty appealing. Yeah, I mean, there was that whole thing in the 60s and also like the kibbutz movement and all that to like stop the nuclear family, what did they call it? Like programming or encoding, they had a better word for it. And so to try to break that bond, and that's what the Shiva Leela were up to, unfortunately led by a egotistical, dark force kind of character, in my opinion. But, you know, a lot of people were trying to break that bond and go back to a more tribal culture for sure. And still, right? Yeah. You have Burning Man and you have a Burning Man, Rainbow Family, all these people who are living tribally. So it's not unusual. So the kids had a mixed experience from what I've learned. Aaron, who's coming to the screenings in the Bay Area, Aaron Marley, he talked about both sides. You know, there were some dark sides of it for him as well. Sometimes the kids weren't taken care of. The goats were wandering around and we were wandering around. You know, it's like a little unsupervised. Maybe that's okay. Yeah. Maybe kids are over-supervised now. You know.
Yeah. I guess.
Seems like it. Like in the States, they're like, well, 3 to 4, Timmy has his judo class. 4 to 5, he's going to take his flute. You know, it's like, whoa, we used to just play in abandoned buildings.
Yes, we are doing this right now. We have an adventure plan for the upcoming weeks. It sounds crazy, but I'm really into really sticking to my adventure plans because I really want to see stuff here and then move on. And first thing is like places to look out for, like World War II bunkers and these kind of things. Explore, like there are villages where nobody lives anymore. That
really?
Is crazy. Whole villages, you can go there and you can play zombie what? Apocalypse and these kind of things.
Can you live there? Yeah, why not, I guess.
We will try to for a
really?
Weekend.
In for the weekend, that's so fun. In Portugal.
Yeah. Let's see, maybe I'll make a little movie out of it. But
you should, because you know that is another thing about since the film came out. Back then, I remember we were like, I was like, yeah, let's put the film in theaters. So we put the film in theaters. So my company, which was essentially me and some interns, were listed as among the like 12 film distributors in the United States that year. It was hilarious. In Variety, it was like Universal Pictures, Paramount, Five Points Pictures. It was like bizarre. And but a lot has changed, and now everyone's a filmmaker.
Like
at Cal State, where I still teach in the winter months, which is a great time to teach in California, Southern California, I tell my students, like, we're all filmmakers, guys. Even if you're becoming a mechanic or plumber or whatever, you're going to make something and put it on YouTube about, here's a quick fix for your car, and if you can't figure it out, come down to my shop, you know? So we all are storytellers, and many people have phones that have video on it and even editing on it, and you can do it all on the phone. You know, it's crazy. So it was a huge revolution since then.
True. It's an overproduction of content, I feel like it.
That's true. That's why it makes it harder to cut through, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of noise. And this is why I like this off-grid living style. If you have internet, okay, changes the situation a little bit.
Yeah.
But if not, you're just with yourself in your tribe or whatever you're living with. I really like that.
And somebody else told me they were like a hermit or something. I was like, well, you know, they're actually, I was thinking about it, there was a guy who was like a hermit at Black Bear. So that's like the whole anarchistic, John Salter, I believe, just kind of lived off in his cabin. It was great. We went there and he had like, you know, guns and like moose parts. And you know, it was just like real, like real kind of country living. And he was a writer and he just didn't want to deal with people. So there should be space for the hermits and the people who just want to be left the fuck alone too. In our new society that we're creating, Alex.
True. I really like that. So, yes. What else can we say about where people can find you or your content, your movies? I mean, in theaters now, you mentioned that, and I will put links to your work and everything in the podcast description for everyone to find with one click. Is there anything else I forgot maybe? I mean, I had so many questions and I still have like millions of them. But maybe you will be on my show a second time to talk about the other film about the Earthlings.
Anytime.
That would be major. So for now, I think we covered so many things. It's incredible. We did.
My God.
Yeah. I really love it.
I need to go be a hermit on a commune after this.
me too.
You asked where to find me. Probably Commune the Movie is the simplest on Insta.
Perfect.
I don't love it, but it's, you know, what people like, and we're putting out clips and schedules. CommuneTheMovie.com has the schedules if people are in the States. And the best way to contact me might be through my school email, because that's super solid when I teach. And come take classes in California, jberman@csusm.com, Cal State University, San Marcos. Oh, sorry, .edu, not .com. Hasn't gone com yet. It's still edu.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
You'll find me at the farmer's market, too.
You won't find me there. You will find me here in the supermarket being annoyed by all the plastic products.
We're going to find you some farmers. We're going to share their crops with you.
Yeah, I'm going to find a boat to bring me somewhere else. That is, I think.
Oh, okay. It's like, I'll just go to the supermarkets for the next few weeks and then we'll get the hell out of here soon. Yeah,
that is what it is. Yeah, you have to deal with this stuff. Not going to lie. It's not from staying forever here, I feel.
Yeah. And I think that you are like almost a descendant of this world of the film, because it's like creating your own reality.
Yes. So bravo. Sure. For sure. And this is what I took from the movie. They really do your own thing, create your own reality and live it. It's so courageous. I love it. So thank you so much for being on my show and taking all of that time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice. Great talking with you.
Thank you so much. So let's see what it says. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support my work, please head over to Fountain or Linktree. I do accept Bitcoin, and it means the world to me if you guys support my work. And leave a comment, reach out to me on Noster. I'm really happy to hear from you. Thank you so much. And if you want to have more of Wildlife Unschooling, head over to Fountain. There's a Wildlife Unschooling Premium. It starts with $5 a month, and you can pay more if you want, and you can pay in Bitcoin. There you will find all bonus episodes, and you will have early access to all my scheduled episodes. Have fun, and see you soon. Unschooling mit meiner Mama. Ich mache hier nicht mit. Sie hat mich dazu gezwungen. Das müssen wir aus dem Hintergrund reinschneiden. Sie hat mich gezwungen.